Howard, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
So you've been investigating black lung in Appalachia and across the country. What made you decide to look into this?
Well, I actually investigated the resurgence of black lung largely in Appalachia in 2012. NPR and the Center for Public Integrity, Chris Hamby at the center, and myself, we got together and we spent quite a bit of time looking at how black lung had come back in a big way after plummeting significantly in the wake of the passage of the Mine Act in 1969. And what we found then in our investigation was that, generally speaking, black lung was occurring at much higher rates, that it was affecting younger miners who had less tenure underground, and that it was hitting miners harder, that there were higher rates of progressive massive fibrosis, which is the worst stage of black lung. One of the things that got Chris and I interested in that was the Upper Big Branch mine disaster and the autopsies of most of those miners, which showed that they had enormously high rates of black lung among those miners, including miners with relatively little tenure underground. I've followed this over the years, and really what happened a couple of months ago is I got a phone call, a tip, that black lung clinics and medical clinics and legal clinics in Appalachia were sort of slammed with miners coming in with what seemed to be excessively high rates of progressive massive fibrosis, you know, the worst stage of the disease, and that's when I started looking into it.
Okay, break it down for us. What's the latest findings? What did you find this time?
I think what's most interesting here is that the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, which is the federal research agency that has been tracking black lung for, 40 years, reported 99 cases of complicated black lung or progressive massive fibrosis in the last 5 years across the entire country. We found 962 cases just in 11 clinics in central Appalachia in roughly that same time period. We found 10 times the number, the official count. NIOSH, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, known as NIOSH, is also publishing a new study that focused on one particular clinic in Kentucky. And that tiny clinic in Pikeville, Kentucky, had 60 cases in 20 months. So it had two-thirds as many cases in that one little clinic in Kentucky in just 20 months that NIOSH was reporting nationwide in 5 years. So NIOSH concludes in its report that the occurrence of progressive massive fibrosis is not really completely understood nationwide. And it suggests that it, as the agency that's supposed to be tracking the disease, has grossly undercounted it, and certainly our findings. We contacted a number of clinics throughout Appalachia, black lung clinics. 11 responded. There are many that did not, that were unable to provide us numbers. But just those 11 clinics had close to 1,000 cases of progressive massive fibrosis since 2010. So there are many, many more cases out there than NIOSH has been counting and has reported.
And you mentioned that you got a tip about clinics and what they were finding in the actual clinics, but you also spent some time in some of these clinics. What were the medical officials, you know, who are familiar with black lung, who work around it daily, what were they telling you as you investigated this?
You know, we went to one particular clinic in St. Charles, Virginia, Stone Mountain Health Services. They have three clinics along the Virginia-Kentucky border. And that clinic alone has had 644 cases of complicated black lung in just the last 3 years. You know, so six times what NIOSH was reporting in roughly that same time frame. And what that clinic and other clinics told us is they're seeing miners who are now retired or who have been laid off and who generally never went to the NIOSH surveillance vans or any of the free NIOSH surveillance testing that's been offered across coal country for years. They never participated in that because they feared that if they had a positive black lung x-ray and somehow the company they worked for found out, they would lose their jobs. This is a widely held belief across Appalachia. It's actually against the law to sanction a coal miner for having a positive x-ray for getting tested. But this is widely, widely believed. And as you know, there have been so many layoffs in coal mining that miners desperately hold on to the jobs they have. And they're also, as you know, the best paid jobs in many of these communities. So the incentive for miners is to not do anything that might threaten their job. And so, you know, they avoided testing. NIOSH actually reports that more than 80% of coal miners in Kentucky did not go into their vans. And I think the number nationwide is like only 30% participate in the NIOSH testing program. So NIOSH acknowledges, and this data is proof, and the clinics show us, and visiting the clinics demonstrate, that there is far more progressive massive fibrosis out there than NIOSH has picked up over the years. And people are coming in now because they're out of work. It's not likely that many of these mines will ever reopen. They may have symptoms, or they don't have a paycheck anymore. They want to see if they have black lung, and then they want to apply for black lung benefits if they do.
Mm. And I want to get back to the numbers and the discrepancies that you mentioned before, that NIOSH had 99 cases on records and that you've uncovered far more than that within the clinics, within parts of Appalachia and the country. How does this happen? Is it just a bureaucratic breakdown?
It's simply because, by law, NIOSH is only permitted to test working miners, number one. And also that testing is voluntary. So miners are encouraged to do it. They're encouraged to do it by mining companies. NIOSH widely advertises their presence in communities when they're there to do testing. But it's voluntary, and they can only test working miners. And because of this phenomenon in Appalachia where working miners are afraid to do anything that might threaten their jobs, many believe that getting a black lung test, just being seen going into one of the NIOSH vans, could cause them to lose their job and not get a job anywhere else. Because they fear that, they don't get tested. So the NIOSH program is hamstrung from the beginning. They're not going to catch most miners. They do test tens of thousands of them, but it's still a fraction. And that's why this has occurred. There are just many, many miners who didn't go in for testing and are now going in for testing because they're laid off or they're retired. There's no hope of going back to work because it doesn't look like many of these mines will ever reopen. And so they want to see if they have black lung, and they want to see if they can get black lung benefits.
Mm. Yeah, and not only are these jobs some of the best paying jobs in the region, in some parts of Appalachia, a lot of times it's part of the only jobs that, and even the other jobs are dependent upon, you know, the economy that basically surrounds coal mining, because many of these communities in Appalachia are not diversified. Now, there is mining across, there are mining operations across much of the country, but not in every state. So why should someone in a place like Connecticut or some other place that's not familiar with it, why should they care about this situation?
Because black lung generally has cost taxpayers and coal companies over $40 billion in benefits paid to sick coal miners since the 1970s. And if there is indeed this large spike that we have identified at NPR that NIOSH is now talking about, that means that there will be many more coal miners seeking benefits. And one of the things that you hear from black lung clinics is that these miners are younger. They're in their 30s and 40s, and they have progressive massive fibrosis, the worst stage of black lung. You used to see that only in miners in their 60s and 70s. And because they're younger, the benefits that they're going to need, they may need longer. They may live longer. Also, there is no cure for progressive massive fibrosis. It's fatal. The only thing you can do, if you're healthy enough, is get a lung transplant. Well, lung transplants are very expensive, costing over $500,000. And with coal mining companies going bankrupt and not being able to pay black lung benefits that they're supposed to pay, this ends up falling on taxpayers on the federal black lung trust fund. So this disease will end up costing taxpayers lots of money to take care of these miners. Now, the other reason people should care is because these are human beings who did a job that was essentially geared toward providing power to all Americans. And we have a country that was built on the power that coal provided during the Industrial Revolution and later. And so these miners have done a job that we've all benefited from, and they have suffered horribly as a result of this illness that they're getting. And so it seems to me that that's something not only we all should care about, but that we all have a share in.
Hmm. And what would you say to the folks who say, well, you know, they chose to be a miner. They knew the dangers of working in the mines, and maybe they should have worn masks more, or maybe they should have taken better care of their own workplace. And I'll also add that, you know, there's times I've spoken to a few miners who even say themselves, there's no way to have a dust-free mine, that these are the conditions. But what would you say to those people who say this is their reality, they deserve what they get?
Well, coal miners work in coal mines, one, because it's either the only job around, it's the only job around that pays enough money to support a family. It may be part of their family and cultural history. Great-grandpa was a coal miner, great-grandpa was a coal miner, dad was a coal miner, mom was a coal miner, sister's a coal miner. I've talked to miners who, you know, who have long histories of coal mining in their families and long histories of black lung in their families. There isn't a whole lot of choice in many of these mining communities. And these are not people who can just pick up and, you know, say, oh, well, I don't want to live here, I'm going to go live somewhere else. I mean, these aren't places where people have those kind of resources to be as mobile as many Americans are. So that's one thing. And I got to tell you, I've never met a coal miner who doesn't love the work as well. In terms of the conditions, what miners say over and over again is, you know, they had safety devices like respirators, for example, or masks, breathing masks. And there are various kinds of methods to control exposure to dust underground. The problem is that in order to take the time to make sure that the dust is controlled, 100% and that it's safe, it can cut into time spent actually mining coal. It can cut into production. And miner after miner who have worked in dusty mines will tell you that respirators clog up. Especially when there's a lot of dust and dust from rock, from cutting both coal and rock. They get clogged up pretty quick. It's also really hard to work in a mask when you're doing work like mining. Just turning your head breaks the seal and lets dust in. And so miners will tell you that they tried, but that they also were under pressure to produce coal, and that in many, many mines, that's what the priority was. And their priority was to work hard enough and produce enough coal to feed their families. So they had this kind of a terrible choice at times. And you'll hear one miner in our story talk about that choice he made. And he said he would do it all over again because it gave him the ability to provide for his family in a way he would not have been able to otherwise, despite the fact that it has caused him horrific disease that will kill him at a much younger age than otherwise.
Mm. We've heard a lot about coal's decline and the economic impacts of folks dealing with job losses in this area. Does this investigation show an impact on health because of coal's decline?
There's been a long-term decline in coal in Appalachia due to the fact that the best coal seams, you know, have pretty much played out. The thickest seams, that where it was easiest to get to the coal, And so there's been a lot of cutting of thinner seams where the coal is interlaced with rock. And that rock in central Appalachia is generally quartz, and that quartz contains silica. So, you know, the quest to keep mining coal, even with thinner seams, ends up producing a mine dust that contains silica, and silica is far more toxic than coal dust alone. Coal dust, when you inhale coal dust, if you have enough break between shifts, you can actually, your lungs can actually kind of expel some of those particles, not silica. You inhale it, it's in your lungs forever, and the lungs start reacting, building defenses against it, and that eventually becomes progressive massive fibrosis. And your lungs basically lose their function as a result of that. So, you know, that's one thing. Something else that's happened as the big, you know, easy to reach coal seams have played out, there's something called slope mining, where you'll take mining machines and cut through solid rock. One miner in our story talks about how he did that for 6 months to reach a coal seam, cut through solid rock. Well, that was 6 months of being enveloped in silica. And the technology of those mining machines is such that one of the main features of providing ventilation so that the dust is swept away is defeated when you're cutting near the floor as you're cutting through. So I would say that is likely one of the things that has happened here is that as miners have, mining companies have chosen to cut thinner seams. They've been cutting rock that generates silica. That is clearly one of the issues that the experts believe is has been at play here.
Part of your report found that, yes, there is a surge in diagnosis, but there's also a surge in testing. Can you explain that?
Mines shut down in Appalachia. I believe it's more than 600 mines have shut down. More than 40,000 jobs have been lost in the last few years. As that happens, the miners who are out of work and are not receiving a paycheck start looking around for, well, where am I going to get money? And some of them also, you know, may have had symptoms, but they didn't want to get tested when they were working because they feared that getting a test might cost them their job. So you have thousands of miners who are now perhaps interested in getting black lung benefits or just seeing how healthy their lungs are because they're laid off, because they're retired. And they also don't have much hope of going back to work. They don't see much hope of these mines reopening. So they go in and get tests, and they're going in by the thousands to get black lung tests at black lung clinics across Appalachia. So there's that huge bump in the numbers of people being tested. But the experts in this field who have been working on black lung, tracking it for, you know, 30 years, including the scientists at NIOSH, at West Virginia University, Bob Cohen at the University of Illinois in Chicago. These are all people who've been tracking this for years. They're all completely blown away by the numbers that we came up with and by the numbers they found at this clinic in Kentucky in the NIOSH report. It's just so far above what they've ever seen reported in terms of progressive massive fibrosis. They're just completely blown away. It's the worst. Bob Cohen at the University of Illinois, who's been doing this for 30 years, he says it's the worst thing he's seen in his career. And Lee Petzonk at the at West Virginia University, who's been doing this for decades, he said it makes him feel like he's failed in his decades-long quest to protect coal miners. Yes, more people are showing up for tests, but the numbers of people, the rate of progressive massive fibrosis is just off the charts.
I have to admit, it is a little frightening to think about as we look at these numbers and we think about the realities, you know, if there is a harsher or a decision somehow to say, you know, mining is just too dangerous, it's too much of a hazard for coal miners these days, it's not worth it to send miners underground. I mean, without a diversified economy, then what?
The mining experts tell me, certainly, you know, Joe Maine at the Mine Safety and Health Administration, the National Mining Association, people at NIOSH, people who've studied black lung, you know, one of the things they say is that it is possible to operate mines safely and to protect miners from inhaling dust. You just have to pay attention to that. So it may mean not producing as much coal from time to time, and that's where the rub comes in. There's a, you know, there's this ongoing tension in mining between safety and production, and achieving that balance is where miners are protected. And some mining companies are better at it than others. And most miners I talk to say that things got a lot safer. The attention to safety got a lot better after the Upper Big Branch mine disaster. And we won't know, you know, one thing we have to realize is that these cases of progressive massive fibrosis have taken at least a decade to develop. So we're looking at a result of mining practices that occurred certainly before the Upper Big Branch mine disaster. And certainly before the new dust limit rules that have been put in place by the Mine Safety and Health Administration and took full effect in August. We won't know for another 10 years or so how effective, you know, those things have been. But the bottom line is, I think many people will tell you that it is possible to do this work safely. You just have to pay attention to all the safety measures, and you have to be careful not to put miners under too much pressure to produce coal and not pay attention to safety.
And that is an important point. You spent time in the coal fields and you spent time with some of these families. Tell us, when a miner is diagnosed with this debilitating black lung, what happens to the miners and their families? How does it affect them?
Well, this is a terrible disease. One miner described watching his grandfather die of black lung. He watched his father die of black lung. He has a combination of black lung and silicosis, and he says, I'm going to suffocate to death. I'm just going to slowly, slowly, slowly lose the ability to breathe, and one day I won't be able to take another breath. I will suffocate. I've talked to miners who talk about it feels like you have a sack of sand in your chest. You just can't get enough air. And family members, spouses who've talked about dreams they had for, you know, retirement and not being able to travel, not being able to really do much of anything. And grandfathers talking about not being able to do the simple, wonderful thing of picking up a grandchild because they don't have enough energy, or you know, chasing the kid around the yard, or mowing the lawn, or cooking dinner, or talking to reporters. We've had miners who almost, you know, collapse because just talking is requires so much effort. And I really feel for these miners who generally, you know, they worked really hard physical jobs. And that's one of the reasons miners talk about loving that work. It was tough physically, really challenging. And this disease strikes them down. It makes them unable to do even the simplest things. It destroys them, and it destroys whatever lives they and their families had hoped to have.
As you mentioned in your reports, there are funds set up to help pay for or take care of the miners. One is the Federal Black Lung Fund, which you mentioned is, I believe in the reports, is basically in the hole right now. There are also times that companies are responsible for the care, but many of these companies have declared bankruptcy and shed liabilities such as benefits in the process. And for many of these miners, the only other option is Medicaid in the form of Obamacare, which, as you probably know, is now on the chopping block with the incoming administration. So are there any ideas to help these miners? Is Congress paying attention to what's going on?
There are some Democrats in Congress who champion protecting miners and are paying attention to black lung. The Congress is controlled now by Republicans, and there will be a Republican president, and it's unclear what will happen in the new Congress with these issues. The trust fund has enough money to pay the claims that are coming in right now. It is over almost $6 billion in debt, but its cash flow in terms of the money coming in from coal companies that pay into the fund is holding up, is matching what the demand is. The concern is that the demand is going to increase exponentially at a time when, as you mentioned, coal companies are going bankrupt. There'll be fewer coal companies paying the excise tax that supports the fund. Many coal companies pay the benefits themselves, but as you mentioned, with companies going bankrupt, the self-insured companies that are going bankrupt, some of them are not able to pay the benefits, and the federal government has reported 1,000 black lung benefits cases have now been transferred over to the federal trust fund because coal companies can't pay those benefits. The trust fund excise tax is set to be cut in half in 2 years unless Congress acts. It's unclear what will happen there. And you mentioned the Affordable Care Act. And one of the major issues with the Affordable Care Act is that it contains a provision that makes it far easier for minors to get black lung benefits. There's an assumption in that provision that if you worked 15 years underground and you have the symptoms, then you have black lung. If the Affordable Care Act is repealed, as many are threatening to do right now, it looks like that provision would then disappear. So there is a peril for minors who need benefits ahead if the system is slammed with a lot of new cases, which are expected to be more expensive cases because the younger minors getting progressive massive fibrosis would be expected to live longer, and there may be an increased demand for lung transplants, which is, you know, that's the only thing you can do. Progressive massive fibrosis, black lung, it's incurable. It will kill you. You can forestall death with a lung transplant, which could give you, you know, 5 to 10 more years of life. And lung transplants are very expensive, and the federal system would, you know, would be paying for that. So it's not clear what's going to happen, but this is something that members of Congress, black lung clinic directors, everybody, minors are watching closely.
Have you seen any changes since you started digging into these numbers? Has NIOSH responded to the reports and the findings and decided to change how they collect data?
NIOSH doesn't have much flexibility here because the way they collect data is prescribed by federal law. Testing of minors is voluntary. They can't control that. They can't make it mandatory without Congress, you know, doing that. And they can only test working minors, at least in their surveillance program. Now, they do have the ability to launch independent studies in which they can test other minors. And you know, the scientists there tell me that that's what one thing they hope to do is to launch some independent studies like the one they did of this particular clinic in Kentucky so they can get a better sense of the occurrence of the disease. They can look at the work histories of the minors involved and see if there are any commonalities there in terms of types of work that they did, mines that they worked in, the coal seams that they worked in. And independently of that, Bob Cohen at the University of Illinois at Chicago is, because of the data that NPR collected from clinics, is now interested in doing a comprehensive study of black lung clinics nationwide to really get a handle on what's going on. So those things can happen. But NIOSH can't change what it does in terms of its surveillance of black lung without a change in the law. And so that would be up to Congress. And it's really unclear how Congress will react. You can expect that there will be some members of Congress in coal mining states who will end up being defensive for fear that this kind of information would be used to try to harm the coal industry, perhaps to bring in more regulation. So there may be that kind of reaction. There will be others who will, you know, call for more stringent controls. there is there's been pending for quite some time a rule that would impose controls specifically related to silica in coal mines. Mining is the only industry in this country that cuts rock that does not have a silica exposure limit specifically. There is a kind of a silica limit built into the coal dust limit that's in effect. But with every other industry that involves cutting rock, there are specific limits for silica. That has been under consideration for quite some time at the Labor Department, and whether that will have any movement in the new administration is really unclear.
And as we listen to your reports that will air on NPR, is there anything else you'd like to add that you'd like to share about these stories?
When you listen to these stories and you listen to these miners, you know, listen to what they say and how they say it. We have one miner from that clinic in Kentucky, Mackie Branham, who can't utter a single word without deep breaths around each word. He just turned 39 and he has five kids. He's only 19 years underground. Relatively young guy who has this fatal disease, and if he's lucky, he'll get a lung transplant. And if he's lucky, that transplant will give him maybe 5 to 10 more years of life. You know, all he wants to do is live long enough to see grandkids. All he wants to do is to live long enough to kind of enjoy his children and maybe some grandchildren. And it's unclear whether that's going to be possible. And, you know, this is a guy, as you'll hear, this is a guy who worked double shifts whenever he had the chance. He worked 7-day weeks. He's the guy who spent 6 months enveloped in dust in that slope mine, cutting that slope mine. He feels like he has worked really hard. He's helped provide for his family. And now he's in this predicament that is not of his own making. This is a complicated situation. It's easy for people who aren't in Appalachia to listen to these stories and say, well, why do those people work in those mines? And why aren't they doing more to protect themselves? It's much more complicated than that. Listen to what these people are saying. Get some sense of the kind of circumstances that exist for these people in this part of the country. I think understanding is what's required here, and then maybe having a better appreciation for what's taken place.
Howard Berkus is the investigations correspondent for NPR. Howard, thank you so much for your time. It's been very interesting and enlightening.
You're welcome.